You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. eSurance, insurance for the modern world. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB At The Plate. MLB At The Plate airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on TuneIn.
Welcome into the MLB At The Plate podcast presented by eSurance. Paul Severino today, joined by J.P. Arencibia. Going to open the podcast today with the MLB At The Plate Triple Play, which is where J.P. and I discuss three topics that interest us. Tonight, our Triple Play consists of discussions involving who would you take to start a franchise with, Aaron Judge or Cody Bellinger, a little more on Freddie Freeman possibly changing positions, and which players we're still waiting for to heat up.
The MLB At The Plate Triple Play, presented by eSurance.
Aaron Judge is off to a terrific start, JP, this season. Then again, so is Cody Bellinger. And it got me thinking, and mainly because I was asked the question while doing an interview a couple of days ago, if you had a choice to start a franchise with Aaron Judge or Cody Bellinger, who would you pick? Who you got?
Pretty easy decision for me is definitely Cody Bellinger. And you look at his age. One, for me, obviously, age has a lot to do with it. He's 21. Or is it 21 or 22?
21. Yep. 21. He'll be 22 soon, but 21.
21. He is a left-handed bat, which for me, if I have a son, I'm going to make him a lefty because the game is made for left-handed hitters. And what he's doing at his clip, he is not filled out. You look at a Judge. Judge is 6'4", 250, and he's stacked, pure muscle. The guy, you know, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get an Aaron
Judge. 6'4", when he sits down. He's 6'7".
Okay, there you go. 6'7", and, you know, he's not going to continue to put on more muscle. You look at a Bellinger, I look at him as not only is he an unbelievable player, he's very raw. He still has time to fill into that frame. His swing does not look like it has as many holes as I've played against Aaron Judge, so I don't have the opportunity to know from standing behind the dish what it looks like their swing comparison. But I do know that Judge, being such a big man, you automatically have holes, that more holes than another person would. You look at Bellinger, he is so flexible. His swing is so fluid. You're watching him hit balls all over the park, all speeds. I mean, just top to bottom, he is, for me, head over heels. The only thing that's a difference for me is the defense as far as separating a first baseman or an outfielder. Obviously, I think outfielders are more valuable because what they can do with defense. Aaron Judge has an absolute cannon out there, and he is a good defender. Bellinger plays first base. So, you know, first base, you can be a good defender. Can you impact the game as much? I don't know. But for me, it's Cody Bellinger. What about you?
I would lean toward Bellinger, but I would say it's close. And the case that I made the other day, and again, while I would choose Bellinger, I would say this. And certainly you can speak to this more than I can. And we talked about this a little bit while we were chatting with each other, listening to a game a few minutes ago. Doing it on a nightly basis and doing it year after year is very difficult in this game. The way I see it is that Aaron Judge has already struggled. And listen, he's going to struggle again. Every player will struggle. We get that. But he had some really ugly struggles last year. I mean, he showed some promise here and there, but it was like every other at-bat, almost literally, he had struck out. And he came back this year and is a completely different player. I mean, this is a guy who, again, struck out every other at-bat last year. This year, he's hitting .330. He's got like a little bit of a Miguel Cabrera to him in the sense of, and granted, he just struck out a little while ago, and the strikeouts are not out of his game, but they're a lot less. There's a two-strike approach to his game. We haven't seen Bellinger struggle yet, and it will be interesting to see, you know, that second time around the league, how does he fare? When he goes 0-15, when he goes 0-20, when he goes 2-30, you know, how does he bounce back? I mean, right now it's a great story, don't get me wrong. But it would be interesting to see the adjustments that have been made by Aaron Judge. That's, to me, that's promising. And I will be curious to see how Bellinger makes those changes, if and certainly when he begins to struggle. But again, long story long, yeah, I'm taking Bellinger too, based on the 4-year age gap there, or 3.5, whatever you want to call it. But listen, I think both franchises are happy with the player that they've got right now and happy with the production that they are getting out of their guy.
Yeah, and there's a few things to that. I think, one, with that strikeout with Judge, right? 1-2 fastball right down the middle. What that tells me is he's thinking the game. Because if you watch some of the best hitters, and I hate it, you know, calling game with the Yankees, calling game against the Yankees when they had all the veterans that they had on their in their lineup, it was always tough. And a lot of the strikeouts were looking, and that was because they had a plan. They were up there with a plan and didn't care if you threw the pitch that they weren't looking for. They were just sticking to their plan. And you watch a guy take a fastball down the middle with two strikes, you know he was sitting breaking ball there. And for me, that tells me that his adjustment, whatever he did last year, mentally his adjustment as an approach at the plate is already becoming a more mature approach. That was something I never was able to do. I was never able to really just stick to a pitch. That's why I struck out. And then I continued to strike out through my career because I was a very aggressive hitter. With Bellinger, you're right. You don't know what he's going to do, how he's going to go when he struggles, and how is he going to bounce back. That's the one thing for me that Aaron Judge, you hear everybody talk about Aaron Judge. And when they tell you he has that Jeter kind of mentality, he has that Jeter kind of character, then that puts you in a different kind of level for what you want in the clubhouse. Because if it's a guy that you're saying is like a Jeter type of mentality, I mean, that is a super, super special person who's going to make everybody around them better, who's going to do the things right, who's going to be a championship caliber player. So I think sometimes, too, and that's what no one in the world, and I don't care if a stats person or not a stats person, you'll never be able to quantify character. You'll never be able to quantify what somebody brings to a clubhouse and how they can improve a clubhouse or affect the clubhouse negatively. Because if somebody is a bad apple, it is a brutal apple. They hurt. They mess around with everybody in the clubhouse, and it's tough to have bad apples on the team and win. So that's another element that, for me, Judge, not that Bellinger, there's you always hear great things about Bellinger as well, but when you're saying that this guy is comparable to a Derek Jeter, the way he goes about his business, that to me means off-the-charts makeup, which gives you another advantage to being an amazing player.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Derek Jeter is a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's just a matter of how close to 100% he gets. But even though he was well over 3,000 hits, you look up and down his baseball reference page, and there's not a lot of black ink in terms of, you know, leading the league in X, Y, and Z categories. He didn't do it that much. You know, I mean, it was consistent as heck, 200 hits basically every single season. But, you know, never won an MVP. So he never had the greatest stats. But to your point, that's exactly it. It's that leadership quality. It's that killer instinct. It's that I don't care if it's April 3rd or October 31st. We're winning a game. We're winning today. And that's our goal, is to go out there and win every single game that we play. And I know that the Yankees have a captain's camp. And Derek Jeter goes down to Florida during spring training or in the offseason, not exactly sure when it is, but goes down there and meets with the prospects, with the young farm system players, and just kind of tells them, you know, and we hear it a lot of different organizations, the Oriole way, the Cardinal way, the Yankee way, this, that, or whatever. But there's something to be said for a team, a franchise that does not have a lot of captains in their career, in their franchise history. And say what you will about being a captain, but when there's only, you know, a little more than a handful in 100 years worth of your history, then there's something special to that title of being a captain. This is not hockey, where every team has to have a captain. So for the Yankees, it's a special honor to be a captain. And when Jeter gives back, and maybe in a, you know, roundabout way, is passing the torch to who knows. And I get it. It's less than a calendar year that Aaron Judge has been in the big leagues. I'm not putting him in Cooperstown. I'm not giving him the captain title of the Yankees, but it seems like it's on that path. So, you know, again, it's a fun conversation to have. And, you know, 10 minutes ago when we started it, it was Bellinger or Judge, but they're two terrific players. There's no doubt about that. Matt Adams has connected on a home run in Atlanta. Boy, oh boy, what a find Matt Adams has been. The Atlanta Braves go out and get Adams from St. Louis right after Freddie Freeman, who was in the MVP chat, albeit earlier in the season. Adams comes in, and he has stepped in a big way. In his career against Jeff Samardzija, he's hitting over 500, but in his last 18 games, now 9 home runs, and with the 2-run home run up to 23 RBIs. And this comes on the same day, or maybe the day after, that news is there's news out of Atlanta that maybe when Freeman comes back, and we're still a couple of weeks away from that, that Freeman's going to maybe play some third base just to get Adams and Freeman to have their bats in the lineup on a nightly basis. JP, what do you think of that?
I think it's crazy. I think it's Freddie Freeman. Listen, he's a phenomenal player, obviously offensive player. Is he defensive enough to play a different position? I don't necessarily think that he is, but I guess we'll find out. I mean, Matt Adams has been a pleasant surprise. You know, St. Louis kind of just tried to unload him, it seemed like, and so they did, and now he goes to Atlanta and he's going off in Atlanta, which he's done it. It's not like it's a surprise. He's really done it actually in St. Louis when he's had the opportunity. So it's a good problem to have. Unfortunately, they don't play in the American League. So I think, they're going to have to figure out at some point, what do they do? How do they put both of these guys in the lineup and still not really put their defense at risk?
You know, there's obviously also the connection with the future Hall of Famer, Chipper Jones, who played a lot of third base in Atlanta. Jones was playing with Freddie Freeman toward the tail end of his career. Would you imagine that Chipper's still in pretty good shape, that maybe Chipper Jones works a little bit with Freddie Freeman over at third?
Yeah, no, I imagine that they didn't have him work on him. And, they have Ron Washington, who is a big infield guy when he was the manager with the Rangers when I was with him. And I made my transition when Prince got hurt. I started playing first every day, and he was the guy that helped me every single day. And he actually was, he really did help me a lot. And I was able to go out there and play some good defense again. But it's just third base is a tough position. And playing third base at the major league level with guys hitting absolute rockets to you, and not that first base is any different, but first base, you catch the ball and you tag the base. You don't have to worry about getting your feet in the position to make a throw across the diamond, all these different things. You know, that's where it gets hairy for me. Is he going to catch the ball? Yeah, I mean, I don't care if it looks nice or ugly. You just want him to catch the ball. Is he going to be able to get his feet under him and make the throw across the diamond day in and day out is the question that I would have.
That's the other thing that I was thinking, knowing that we were going to talk about this at some point tonight, is that and again, my day job at MLB Network, I work with an awful lot of guys that have bounced around the diamond, but also a lot of first basemen as well. Sean Casey, Carlos Pena, Jim Thome obviously come to mind right off the top of my head. But it seems like everybody says, and I'm not saying everybody's right, I'm just saying everybody says, oh, you know what, let's just stick the guy over at first base. And then what happens? You stick a guy over at first base. Oh, he can field a couple of ground balls and catch the chest high throw. That's all well and good. But then, it's the seventh or eighth inning of a game, and there's that ground ball to his right, and now he's a step or two too far off the bag. The second baseman's the one that makes the play. The pitcher doesn't cover, and now we make a big deal out of it. So the flip side of that, with the conversation we're having with Freddie Freeman, is that, sure, a ground ball, when you break it down, a ground ball is a ground ball. Freddie Freeman fields ground balls at first. He can field a ground ball at third. But what is going to be the difference in terms of the responsibilities or the sense of third base? Now, Freddie Freeman doesn't often throw to his left at first base. Maybe the pitcher covering every once in a while. He might have to be asked to start a double play every once in a while. He's going to have to take the cutoffs from left field every once in a while. Charge on a bunt. I mean, there's so much. That's what I think what I'm getting upset with is, like, so many people say, oh, we'll just hide a guy. This is Major League Baseball. The ball finds you.
100%.
The ball is going to find Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, 100%. The ball does find you. And defense in the big leagues is the premium as far as you know, there's guys in AAA that hit 330 every year with 25 bombs, and you're like, man, why is this guy never make it to the big leagues? Well, you watch them play defense. And they might have made it to the big leagues, they just don't stay there, because you watch them play defense, and you see the difference between, let's say it's a shortstop, let's say it's a second baseman, you see the difference of a guy who makes the routine play, or boots the routine play, or a guy that can just so as much finish a double play, turn the double play, or, you know, in the outfield, make the throws, do different things. Defense in the major leagues, not only do you have to hit, but you have to be good at defense. And you're right. When you are not good at defense, it finds you. And if you're not experienced in defense, let's not even say if you're not good. If you're not experienced in defense, it's going to find you. Positioning. At first base, one of the hardest things for me learning was, where do I go in a ball in the gap, man on first base? Where am I going when there's a ball in the gap, man on first base? What is my read? Where am I? Who am I backing up? Where do I need to be? Now you go to third base, you're involved in a lot more, you know, double cuts. You're a lot more involved in balls down the left field line with a man on first base, with a man on second base, with men on first and second. And you're right. Now all of a sudden you put that guy out there at third base, teams are going to try to bunt. And what happens if he can't come in and make a play on a bunt? Then teams are going to expose that. You know,
bunt,
everybody.
And bunt and bunt and bunt. Yeah.
Yeah. So why not? I mean, listen, it's a good problem to have because you have two good hitters. It's going to be a tough ask for Freddie Freeman to go out there. It's not like the Blue Jays, right? The Blue Jays, when I was with Toronto, they moved Bautista from right field to third base. Well, Bautista was a third baseman. He played infield with the Pirates. Like, this guy, you know, and it was tough for him to make the transition as far as he got the play done. Was it the best? Was it the smoothest? No, but he got it done. That's Bautista, who's a infielder, then moved to the outfield, coming back to the infield. You're talking about Freeman, who's only played first base, like you said, who's only turned to his right to make a 60-foot throw, 70-foot throw.
Right.
And now you're talking about you're having to throw a ball across the diamond. I have to get my feet under me. And you're right. At the end of the day, he might make the plays, but it's the throw in the ninth inning when the game is on the line and there's a man on third base with two outs and they hit him a ball and you're down one or you're up one and you don't make that throw and all of a sudden it's a tie game and you lose. That's the difference. And now the other flip side of that is you're talking about the Atlanta Braves and Abe Gordon. I know, you know, wears it, but the Atlanta Braves aren't going to be even close to being the winning team. So, you know, at the end of the day, is it about winning and losing? No, I don't know. But if you're putting Freddie and Freeman out there, you're not necessarily worried about losing.
It was cold-blooded right there at the end there, just throwing the producer right under the bus. Good for you, though. Seriously, good for you. Nice job. The Tigers are a team that need to get something going. But if we're going to talk about players that need to get something going here, we're into late June here. There's another week or so left of June, so we're not early anymore. Give me some guys, JP, that need to get things going sooner rather than later.
Well, you know, I look around Toronto. One, Bautista, you know, he was starting to get going, and then he kind of has fallen off again. He's a guy that needs to get going. Troy Tulowitzki is a guy that needs to get going, who really hasn't been himself since he left kind of Colorado. Another guy for me that stands out, Miguel Cabrera. You know, where in the time at this point in the year are we not talking about Miguel Cabrera and the Triple Crown? He's hitting 265 with 7 and 32 RBIs at this point in the year. He's a guy, you know, if they want to win, he is a huge part. He's a game changer himself. And so those are some guys that really, really stand out to me. What about you?
Yeah, I would certainly agree. I think about a week ago, you probably could have said Carlos Gonzalez, and maybe he's starting to heat up a little bit. I would even spin it forward, or maybe even spin it backwards a little bit. A guy that we talked about before who needed to get it going and has, even though he's been dropped in the order, is Andrew McCutchen. I mean, I think that he is. I've said this a million times, and I'll say it a million more. He is so good for the game of baseball. And if you're a fan of a franchise, if you're, you know, higher up in a franchise in their front office, he's what you want to represent your team. He really is. On the field, he's an absolute superstar. Off the field, he's probably an even better guy. And I'm glad that for all that he's been through in Pittsburgh, and let's not forget that while there have been some good years these last few for the Pittsburgh Pirates, he was also around for some pretty crummy years too, and a lot of losing in the Steel City. And I'm glad to see that he's been able to turn things around because he's really one of baseball's good guys. And I think that with Miggy, the thing is, and again, far be it for me to say anything. Obviously, the closest I've ever come to being a big leaguer is playing on PlayStation a few years back. But, you know, like if you're on the field, and he's not making excuses, don't get me wrong, but if you're on the field, you got to perform. And it sounds like he's going through a lot of injuries right now and battling a lot of different things. But the Tigers, just on the whole, are an interesting bunch in what direction they're going to go if they keep kind of teasing everybody and teasing their front office into what they might do around the trade deadline. They've got some pieces. You know, a guy like J.D. Martinez could be a real interesting piece come trade deadline. And with the way that Verlander looks tonight, you know, I'm not saying that anybody's going to pick up. There's a lot of money left on that deal. Tigers are in a weird spot right now. And like I said before, it kind of has that feeling of a window that's closing.
You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by eSurance. And we'll be right back with more after this.
Catch tomorrow's baseball starts today with Minor League Baseball on TuneIn. Throughout the season, listen live to the home calls of more than 160 minor league teams. From Class A to AAA games all across the country. With Minor League Baseball on TuneIn, hear top prospects take the field before they get called up. Listen in as players work their way back to Major League Baseball during rehabilitation starts. And catch your favorite minor league players and your favorite teams in action, including Tim Tebow. Listen to Minor League Baseball all season long on TuneIn.
This is the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Here are your hosts, Paul Severino and J.P. Arencibia.
There were 15 games on Wednesday, and a quick recap of them all. We've got the best day ever home run tracker, and statistically speaking, if we're assessing things at the moment, who had the best day ever?
Best day ever on MLB At The Plate.
This is where we have our pitcher of the day, our hitter of the day. JP, I'll let you go first. Who you got?
Well, my pitcher of the day happens to be from the Cleveland Indians, Mr. Carrasco. He went six innings, gave up seven hits, and punched out 10 with no runs. And, you know, they scored a run at the end there, Baltimore did, but he would have had the team would have had a shutout, but he definitely put up all the zeros he needed to help his team win.
Yeah, it's not often that that we go with a guy on a losing team, but Max Scherzer was unbelievable this afternoon. He took a no-hitter into the eighth inning against the Marlins, ended up losing the game, but he goes eight innings, two hits, two runs, neither one of them earned, a walk and 11 strikeouts. Couple of notes on him. I know we got a lot of stats coming up in Statistically Speaking in just a second, but I want to get these with Max Scherzer right here. First pitcher to have a no-hit bid of seven or more innings and take the loss in a game since James Shields in August of 2009. It was, however, his sixth straight game with 10 or more strikeouts, which ties a Nationals Expos franchise record set by Pedro Martinez in 1997. And Scherzer has made 82 starts for the Nationals. He's carried a no-hitter into the sixth inning in 11 of those games. He's got that look in each colored eye that on certain nights where he just looks untouchable and just looks like I was listening to F.P. Santangelo do the game today, and he said he's stalking again. He's just got that that imposing personality. So I go with Max Scherzer. Your hitter of the day, J.P., who you got?
My hitter of the day has to be Mr. Salvador Perez, continuing what seems to be like a career year, especially power numbers, with his 15th home run, which happened to be a grand slam. He went 3-for-3. He scored a run on that home run. He had 4 RBIs on that grand slam, also a walk, and what was big about that was the team was down 4-2 at the time when he hit that bottom of the eighth inning go-ahead grand slam, and they won 6-4.
I'm going to go with a game that's actually still going on, in fact, and that's the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Colorado Rockies, as it's 14-4 in the ninth inning. But as it stands right now, Brandon Drury 3-for-5 with 4 RBIs and a run scored. and he's hitting 301 on the season. Another one, it seems like there's five or six guys on that roster who you could say, you know, best kept secret in baseball. You could say it about Drury when he's healthy. You could say it about Pollock. You could say it about Jake Lamb, and we've been saying it forever about Paul Goldschmidt. So there's a lot to like about the Rockies. Check that, about the Diamondbacks. A lot to like about the Rockies, too, except maybe not tonight. They're down by 10. So there you have it. That is our best day ever. And some of our contestants, in fact, were also part of our home run tracker.
MLB at the Plate home run tracker.
So many home runs around Major League Baseball, not just today, but all year long. So many. JP, you could probably hit a couple now, too, right? You're in great shape. You're chugging down egg whites before. You're in terrific shape. You should have 10 home runs by now.
Yeah, I'd have 10 with about 75 punchies.
Well, believe me, I'd fly past you with the punch-outs, trust me. Trevor Plouffe, his first game with the Tampa Bay Rays, hit a home run for them. Ryan Rayburn hit a homer. Scott Schebler with a home run for the Cincinnati Reds. He continues to rake. Taylor Featherston with a home run as well. Andrew Benintendi hit the longest home run of the day, 454 feet, 104 miles an hour off the bat, and 27 degrees with the launch angle. Xander Bogaerts for the Boston Red Sox, albeit in a losing effort. Ian Happ hit the hardest home run of the day at 112 miles an hour for the Chicago Cubs, who lost again, by the way, 403 feet, 21 degrees off the bat. Eric Ibar with a home run. We mentioned the Sal Perez Grand Slam. That was huge. Didi Gregorius with a homer in the Bronx. Martin Maldonado for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim hit a couple of home runs in a losing effort. Darwin Barney hit a home run tonight as well. Tommy Pham with a couple of homers as the St. Louis Cardinals were able to hold off the Philadelphia Phillies. So Pham with a couple of homers, one at 407, one at 435. Jed Jerko also homered in that game. Matt Holliday broke a tie for the Bronx Bombers with a homer. Francisco Lindor maybe starting to get that bat going. He went deep. Mark Reynolds, shocker, his 18th homer of the season. Miguel Sano with a home run as well, and that one went a long way, 414 feet the opposite way. Shin-Soo Choo connected on a home run for the Texas Rangers. Jose Martinez with a home run for the St. Louis Cardinals. Joey Gallo with an inside-the-park home run as Steve Pierce tried to chase it down in left field, went off the wall, rattled around left field, and Gallo able to hustle around for the home run. Matt Adams with yet another home run for the Atlanta Braves, who are currently tied with the Giants in the 11th right now, 3-3. Josh Bell with a home run. That guy's got immense power for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Curtis Granderson with a home run to get the Mets on the board first, but they now trail this one 5-1 as the Mets and Dodgers play into the fifth inning in L.A. Tyler Flowers with a home run off the top of the wall that was reviewed but stood as a home run. James McCann with a home run to back his battery mate today, Justin Verlander, who is currently throwing a perfect game is really how you pronounce it. He's throwing one of those in Seattle. And Domingo Santana, big home run for the Milwaukee Brewers as the Brew Crew take care of the Pittsburgh Pirates today 4-3. So that's a look at your home run tracker. And who knows, maybe even more to go later on tonight with, again, five games currently still in progress. Time for Statistically Speaking.
Statistically Speaking.
Just talked about the home runs and how many there have been hit, and 22 have been served up by Ricky Nolasco. That is the most in the American League, and that's got to be frustrating, especially in that ballpark, JP. Did you get a chance to play in the new Yankee Stadium? You must have, right?
Yeah. I was actually, yeah. I played all my career at the new Yankee Stadium. I never got to play at the old one.
Oh, man, what am I thinking? It's been a long day, apparently. A six-year-old got me up early today, but that's, I'm just making excuses at this point. Sal Perez with the Grand Slam, you mentioned that. The first by a Royal in the eighth inning or later with his team trailing since Frank White in 1986. Craig Kimbrell with an average curveball velocity. He did not pitch in the game today, however, and that was a topic of conversation after the game. But Craig Kimbrell's average curveball velocity this year is 86.9. Just to put it into perspective, that's 3.5 miles an hour faster than Jared Weaver's average fastball velocity. That's harsh.
That's not saying much, but that is a tough pill to swallow there.
That's mean right there. I don't know why I said that one. That one's tough. I don't like to be mean. I'm a nice guy. Jed Jerko, sixth inning, hit his first home run with a runner on base since last September. Each of his previous 13 home runs were solo shots. Matt Adams with another long ball for the Atlanta Braves. 11 home runs through his first 117 at-bats with the Braves. Freeman has hit 11 home runs in 104 at-bats this year. The Cardinals, get this one. St. Louis Cardinals were 0 for their last 59 when trailing by five or more runs in the game before coming back from a 5-0 deficit. They tied the game in the ninth inning and ended up winning the game in backs, currently leading 14-4 in the ninth and looking for more with two on and one out. But as it stands right now, they scored 10 runs in the fourth inning against the Rockies, most runs they've scored in any inning on the road in franchise history. Tommy Pham led the Cardinals 5 multi-home run games over the last 3 seasons, ranks 13th on the team in games over that span, so there's that. Sean Newcomb, just the third pitcher in Atlanta franchise history to begin his career with 3 consecutive quality starts, so, you know, perhaps a sign of good things to come for the Braves, who, unfortunately, Jim Johnson blew a save, and they play on into the 11th inning right now. 3-3 again, the score with the San Francisco Giants. Josh Bell's 13 home runs, the most by a Pirates rookie prior to the All-Star break since Ralph Kiner hit 15 in 1946. And we end with, more bad news for the Baltimore Orioles. They have now allowed 5 or more runs in 18 straight games. The Major League record is 20 straight games, and that was set in 1924. So this is a long-standing record as the O's, just when you think they might be turning things around, not so much. That's it for the MLB at the Plate podcast presented by Esurance. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn at 7 Eastern each weeknight for MLB at the Plate. During the daily 5-hour show, you're not only going to hear what you heard on this podcast, but also have the chance to listen live to the games and get the action as it happens. For Abe Gordon and Dustin in the LA studio and JP Aaron CB alongside me, I'm Paul Severino saying thanks, and we'll catch you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast presented by Esurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Esurance, insurance for the modern world. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. TuneIn, your everything audio app.